Because that way we'll be able to pitch to you specifically, you know, to maybe help you or direct our conversations to an appropriate part that we want to be interested in.
But first of all, nice of you to come here. And nice of you to do the show.
We've been here all day.
Yeah, okay.
Thanks for having us. Sorry.
Are you happy?
Jumped in, sorry.
Are you happy?
Yes. Very happy.
Very,
very happy. Is Oscar happy? I'm pleased to introduce Thomas, Eric, and Stephen. And we'll talk for an hour, and then I'm going to eat something. Go ahead.
Okay, I guess we just introduce ourselves first, and then you can tell us what you're doing. My name's Stephen King. I've been a band manager for about 25 years. It's all I've really ever done until recently. And I ran management companies. And I did from contemporary R&B to jazz to eventually going to work with Alan McGee, and I did Liberty and 30 Pretty Things, Charlatans, Mogwai, and a few other people. And when that relationship came to a sticky end, I got an offer to run a digital distribution company called Lead Digital, which started in France, and I'm now running the world, excluding France and Germany and Italy, where they have operations. And I've always been involved in pitching my band's music for films, for adverts, and for games, and for looking at ways of earning my artists and writers money outside of the core ways traditionally of selling records and earning money from publishing in traditional ways.
Hi, my name's Eric Friend. I'm from Austin, Texas, and I've been sound editor and a music supervisor, so creating the sound design for films, mixing, and creating the soundtrack, and hiring composers, hiring bands for film television. As freelance engineer, so yeah, I've been working a little bit currently as a musician. I play in a band called Spooner. I'm currently playing in the band The Readers in Austin, Texas. And so when I'm not doing tours or writing with band, we often make some music.
Hello, my name is Thomas Batchy, and my background is primarily from back in the mid-90s. I took a course in audio engineering in London at a place called The Same. That was after I've been playing in bands with people in the drums for a long time, and I wanted to get more into music production. After 1 year there, I went on to the Royal Academy of Music in Copenhagen, where I took a Zonas degree that lasted for 4 years. And since 2000, I have been working as a music composer and sound designer in all sorts of parts of the industry. I've been working with dubbing, cartoons, equipment, with small film projects. The stuff that has made the biggest impact on my career so far has been the gaming industry. Back in 2002, I went to a company called Crytek in Germany that produced a well-known game called Far Cry. I was the music composer for that game. In the process, I also ended up helping to develop an adaptive music system. And that was the cutting edge at that time. A lot of things have happened since. But nowadays, I work at a place called IO Interactive in Copenhagen, and they're producing the Trigger
My name is Thomas, and I live in Copenhagen, where I work as a coordinator. We have this BA degree in music management at the Rhythmic Music Conservatory. And I'm also an editor-in-chief of a music export magazine called Boom Boom. And I did an email interview with Thomas. Nice to see you.
Nice to meet you, Thomas.
Yeah. And then I also work as a music journalist at several music magazine and national paper, Politiken. And then I also myself work as a musician and user.
Man of many hats.
Yes. Yeah. That's me.
That's it.
Yeah, hello, I'm Sen. I work primarily as a promo, like a promo at Crunchyroll, Danish and Canadian. And Nuno and Andreas are also kind of work more closely with Six and the content of Crunchy Tunes that is also within our group. So we're here to hear about
Well, that makes my presentation kind of I'm Andreas. I work at Crunchy Tunes. I do publishing.
Okay, brilliant. What about you?
Yeah, I'm Juliana. I live in Berlin, where I'm part of a research group about interactive music. But in Denmark, I'm also the chairman of the Danish Arts Foundation music panel for classical music and for what they call rhythmic music. And so we also receive applications in touch for people developing the music side of computer games and orientation.
My name is Tobias. I program hip-hop beats.
My name is Steve Leff, and I'm organizer of the Reeperbahn Festival conference in Hamburg.
My name is Arielle Hyatt. I'm here as an international delegate. I run a social media marketing firm in New York City for brands and positions.
My name is Oliver Perkins, and I'm an artist from Iceland.
Classic pop.
Crossover classical with electronic album.
My name is Norbert. I'm from Germany. I'm doing an internship in Vienna at the music agency. And we just founded a sync agency named Swimming Pool. And yeah, therefore, I'm here to sort something out with the gaming thing because we are all music. Especially people, I think. And yeah, the gaming thing is some kind of
I think quite conveniently, the three of us come from very different areas of the business. So essentially, we've got the games company. So my take from, if I can just do my take, is that my opinion of games companies traditionally has been that they wanted to get the music as cheaply as possible, and they wanted the minimum interaction with the artist as possible, and the minimum interaction with the manager as possible, and generally they didn't see the possibility that there was a way that the artist could potentially promote the game or be useful to them apart from giving them the copyright as cheaply as possible. To be negative.
Well, coming this way,
yeah.
I don't want to go to game company, but I do get hired from I agree to some extent, but you know, I think it depends on I think a lot of it is it fits in gaming that features music a lot. I think that's the thing that's more than that's just using drum sample. So but I think that companies do want to find the music fast.
The first question I have is these companies that your company has been dealing with, what kind of game companies have that been with? Big companies?
Pretty much across the board from EA, Sony, you know, everybody down to you know, charities that want to develop a game with use on their site. You know, it has been across the board, and it has been, you know, in the UK and in Japan, in America. Not so much in Europe, but maybe one or two in Italy.
All right. I mean, the biggest question is, of course, what role is this music going to play in the big game? And I don't know, can you elaborate a little bit about what type of games this has been? Has it been primarily sports games where they named a certain track?
Generally what happens if I sign a band to one of my labels, then I get a request from a gaming company or somebody calls and says, you know, is this something you do? And I'd say, what sort of game is it? And they'd say, this is the name of the game. It's, you know, War Killed 2 Million People Today, or, you know, football, total football, or ice hockey, or whatever it is. And then the process for me would be that I would go to the artist and say, is this something you want? And then we'd look at the particular game, we'd look at the particular track, and we'd go back to the game company and say, right, this is something that we would be prepared to do or not, and what's the deal? So it's very varied. I don't think there's, you know, we have had also instances of artists being asked to write specifically for games, but I think the bulk of requests that I've handled are when a game company's come to me and said, we like the Libertines track, would it be in Guitar Hero 2000?
Yeah.
And I go, no, we're in their career, so no.
Yeah. Okay, let's assume that it's a sports game then, a football or an ice hockey game. Do you look at the marketing value, or do you look at the numbers first?
We get the total sales of the game,
yeah,
and we get it broken down on a geographical basis, and we do, depending how quickly they need the answer, another of the problems in doing syncs is very often you get approached very late in the process, and more for film syncs and TV than for games, because the development time is different. But we try and gain as much information as we can and go, where does it sell? Is it a core demographic we want to get to? We look at all the
can tell you that the way Iowa Tech works with music, given the fact that we work with action-based games, action-adventure-based games, we have been working primarily with music composers, soundtrack composers. But a new thing that is starting to happen is that we are trying to look at music not necessarily from a soundtrack perspective, but actually we have a project we're working on right at the moment. Unfortunately, I can't reveal anything about it, but the interesting thing here is that we actually took a different approach where we found an act that had a certain attitude, a certain style, and they were completely unschooled of interactive music, adaptive music. What we tried to do is to start a collaboration with them, because we are in the games industry, the music supervisors, the sound designers, they are the masters of trying to implement the music best way possible. And a lot of people in the industry are talking about it's very important that the composer needs to know how to write to an interactive music system, and to a certain extent that is so true. But what we're also seeing is that a lot of game composers, they sound the same. And the reason why they sound the same is because there is this overall Hollywood approach to creating music for games. Everybody's trying to sound like Hans Zimmer, and everybody's trying to do their best to be as good in the process as, for instance, Sony Interactive, who has recently developed games like Uncharted 2 and God of War 3, where they basically recorded a lot of symphonic orchestra music as kind of sound, and they recorded the different sections in the orchestra separated. So the music supervisors and the people in charge of implementing the music could sit back and re-edit the music specifically to be implemented in the game. That is a current trend. Of course, Sony has a lot of money to support this, but other gaming companies are trying to do the same, just in a smaller scale. My point is that what the film industry has been able to do, because it's much older than the games industry, and this is my point of view, is that they have been able to come up with new ways of using music in movies over the past decades. That has been interesting, and I find that games industry need to find or get a new approach to using music differently, and also some art music that might not necessarily come from the game composer's perspective in the first. In the first place, and therefore, to get back to what I started out with, the artist you can call it a group that we approached, as I said, they didn't have any experience, but we are trying to cope with this, because we get them to deliver tracks separated, or they, what you call it, bounce out the stems, maybe the drums, the bass, the guitar. And the difficult part, of course, is to see how can you take something that is a strict pop or rock song and make it into adaptive music. There are so many challenges to this. So our approach has been more like to try to divide things up a little bit and say, for our games, what kind of music do we need to support the gameplay? First, we need the music that sets the mood of the game, what you call the gameplay, the used some part of that track in the game. What can I say, for the game, in-game music, and then the basis of the track maybe gets used as an opening cutscene for that particular level you're going to play in the game. So to sum it up, you have maybe it was a long song by, I'll give you a blunt example, if you have a song from Coldplay, and you no, that's why I said it like that. If you haven't bounced out, so you maybe had a version without the vocal, and you had the music spoiling the opening cutscene, and then you would be able to use some elements from the song to support the gameplay. So trying to get a red line throughout the whole game, but still the approach would be normal music.
The point I was trying to get across is there seems to be like almost two ways for games companies to go about looking at their music, or maybe multiple, but two blatant ways. One is that they involve a composer or a band in creating unique music that they then adapt to make the sounds and make interactive. Or the traditional one, maybe, or the oldest way, was where they just licensed in whatever they thought was relevant and tried to slightly repurpose it in the process. And I just wondered how you would go about, just very quickly, how you go about what the deals are, how they would work for you. I mean, I know how they work for Sony on certain things, but I wondered, do you do licensing music like that, do you take track by track? Do you buy out the publishing? Do you try and acquire the master rights? Do you buy the artist?
Thomas, before you go on, for us who are not into games industry, is the games industry organized the same way as the music industry? Is that there are some big companies that fund everything, even what you're doing in Denmark and Sweden and stuff like that? Or are there, in, or sort of, since you're a Danish company, are you developing without financing from the States? Or sort of, it's the same as the film industry, it's really based in the States. In some way.
I don't really understand your question, but maybe it's...
Financing, the money that someone told me that, for instance, a Swedish movie, it costs about 15 million pounds. And someone told me a Swedish group game player said that they invested like 150 million into one game. The Darkness, I think it was. And that's like really much more. And it was American money that was put into the little company in Sweden.
So like smaller game studios being owned by larger companies.
I mean, that was how I would answer the question, is that we are also owned by a big company, publishing company also, this cat called Square Enix. They release games as Final Fantasy, which is the biggest franchise. The thing is, you have large budgets for creating games, developing.
business.
And the business.
It's like,
yeah.
You know, we've got artists here, we've got people here that want to see how they get involved. And it's like, you know, we can talk for a long time about developing the style of music for games, but that seems to be quite obvious to me that there is a process that the supervisor goes through, the bench manager goes through. But to pin it down, what I would like to know is trying to understand the scale of what games companies could pay or how they could expand their business. And when you look online to, you know, Thursday in London, for the first time at the Ivan Novello Awards, there was the best original video game store, which is the biggest publishing award in the world. And Killzone 2, which is a pretty amazing game, won it. It was written by Joris Daman, who's actually, as far as I know, isn't a writer. I think he was more developed the sound of games rather than comes from a composer background. And when you look at all the credits through the game, it's all the publishing, which was created by one writer, is now owned by Sony Computer Entertainment Europe. It's not even owned by a publishing company, you know. So suddenly, I don't know the process. I mean, maybe you know the process. He's an independent. He's been commissioned by the company.
By the company, work for hire, okay. And owned by the game.
Well, he's a sound designer, so he works on games, and he traditionally, I think if I'm right about this guy, he's always put the sounds into the games. But for this particular job, Sony have obviously said it's a work for hire, and they said to him, we want you to develop the sound of this whole game. And he's developed scores for the game. But I'm trying to look past the creation process slightly to see how that goes and how it, you know, what the deal is.
Well, I think it depends, you know, if it's a band that, or an established band that has a CD, a record, and then just buying the song, but licensing the track, not the licensing issue, where it's a work for hire composer, the music belongs to the game, and the composer, the game producer, is many times just like, well, the composer,
And what would they pay for it?
Usually by the minute, so it depends on the composer's experience.
How many minutes music would you have to do for a game like that?
Killzone.
And it's huge, isn't it?
To do that music, I guess,
the music at £300 a minute.
It depends.
That doesn't sound like a lot of money.
Well,
I mean, you know, to write and produce and orchestrate 2 hours of music, that's pretty phenomenal, expensive, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's different. It can be an orchestration that's recorded by an orchestra. And, or it could be something that is a drum loop, or, I'm not familiar with it. Could be something that's a keyboard.
Very orchestral. Very orchestral score, I think, as far as I know.
So it could be something that needs
like a film score.
Yeah, and a lot of, you know, just for music games, it's been a lot of the sound design, which is great music. Just the game company doesn't really understand the complete value. I think early on, the value of sound design. So the person who's making the explosion is also composing the score, like the original.
So if a game company came to you and said, okay, we've got this game about submarines in Europe, and we want you to do you quote for the game? Do you say how long's the game? How much music do you need? This is the style I do. Do you set a price, or do they come and say, here's the budget, go away and do it, we own all the rights?
A little bit of both. It's negotiation. I put down my budget, I put down the exactly what I'm going to do, and I know it's
So you say
this
that.
Is what I can give to you.
Yeah.
You know,
you want to buy pad or you want to buy
it? And it's, you know, a lot of the times I think I also work in film and television, and I think the film industry's got a lot longer time to establish a music industry. There's pre-production, production, post-production. There, it's very assembly line.
Your instance of this band you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
Are you almost teaching them how to make music for games? Is that what you were saying?
We're not teaching, we're just showing them the possibilities and some way of proposing that is not necessarily the best way, but we're not trying to sit down and teach them. We're trying to do both parties, but what would be best, because the challenge is also if you set up too many rules for the what can you say, I don't like to use the word untrained interactive music composer, but that's how it seems. If you set up too many rules, you also kill the workflow, the ideas, the creativity, but that's also, that can be an expensive collaboration, because it will cost some money, but the sure bet is to go out and hire the game composer that has been producing several games and has a certain style already, and that you know he will deliver on time and it will sound like maybe one of the previous games we did.
But in this particular case, is there any plan to potentially use the band or the band to use some of this music to help promote their own careers? Is there any strategy that you're looking at that?
I will say that a lot of the songs that we're looking at, they have the potential of standing on their own. And that's how I look at this project. That's very interesting because it's sort of a mixture of traditional songs and soundtrack, and how the way it's looking now is that there would be able to be a CD worth of, let's say, 12 songs in the end that would be able to stand on their own, and it wouldn't be a rip-off of a certain style. It would have that its own. It could stand on its own. I think that's really important.
I had a very similar situation in the early 2000s where I hired a band called Sub Oscar, the independent dub music band in Austin. And they do improvised kind of dub music, really lovely itself, really sounded great for this band I was working on. And we hired them, and we tried to explain to them about the actual feeling. The interactive process of games, how the music can change, and how they work there. And they did this for them, they did a great job, they delivered many different tracks of music, and so, you know, say you encounter a certain area of the jungle and the shape is fine. It'll build, and it'll build a little bit faster, or it'll, you know, get very moving. But, you know, for the conference, I was thinking about them, and I just looked up their site. I haven't seen anything on their site about the game, or like any distillery. I mean, you know, I'm not really on the band side, so like tell them to market themselves.
No, but like, I mean, it works from both sides, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I look at it from a total package, and how we can get the best.
Leicester.
And is the game successful?
No, Microsoft game. Xbox game. Yeah, it was. I don't think it was as successful as they thought. I mean, they made their money back, but I thought it was going to be a very good game.
Can you, on that particular game, can you just take us through the process of how you got permission to be involved and the time scale of what it took to get it to delivery to the company for them to finish it?
Well, it was a game company in Austin called Digital Android that I just freelance worked for, and they were bought up by Microsoft. Some of the games were dropped that we were working on. And they hired me to do a lot of dialogue with them because there was lots, thousands and thousands of dialogue lines. And they had blew already all of their music budget on a huge orchestral score. It was a synthesized score that sounded fine, and they had this money and they went to Los Angeles and they recorded it before. So, certain scenes that just haven't been designed. So, as a musician, the other sound designers are musicians, almost everybody in Austin is a musician. So, we all, I know these people, I feel like really good play at present. We agree on the budget. I can't even remember how much it was, but it was enough for them to record a proper album in the studio. They took the money and went to the studio and recorded an album. But the music that they composed for doesn't sound that different from what we're doing in the studio. It's like improvised their music, so it's instrumental. It goes on for 18 minutes of the track. So
you get to that stage, the band have been in the studio, they've produced all the standards for you.
They produced all the standards. We put it in the game last minute. And it was a lot of times that the sound design was the final tweaks.
I mean, is that a similar process that you go through at all?
We try to avoid using the
using dub mutations.
Using all the budget on one thing.
For sure, we try to avoid that, but. I mean, it is quite intense process in the end, because a lot of the way you implement the music can change the last minute sometimes, because some game design things are getting tweaked, and that will eventually also have an impact on how the music is going to be played. But I was thinking about a question, and that is more about how you go about approaching the game industry. I mean, the other way around, because it sounded like they will approach you guys all the time.
Well, I think if you have successful artists, then you get approached all the time. I think that's one of the things that you can sit back and wait for your publisher and wait for your record company, or you can approach the games company. So with a band like Orbital, we approach Sony direct and said, here's a band, they've got their own studio, they've got 5 albums, they're successful in this area, it seems like their music would work well in a lot of your games. Let's work, they're out of contract, their publishing contract's finished, their recording contract's finished, here's a perfect time for the next 6 months before we do new deals, that we get involved and we work on something together. So Sony decided that was a good idea, and they gave us Sony loved that, and then Sony said, okay, we need this much music broken down into this many stems, and this many lengths, and they paid us a set fee, and then we got, which basically covered all the production costs of us going into the studio, hiring the musicians, plus paying the two guys that are involved about £10,000 each, and we got a royalty on the record, on the game, which I thought was extremely low, but when I checked it out with other people, they said it was acceptable, and we retained ownership of the copyright in the music and the recording, which wasn't very usual, I think, at the time. So that was the instance, and we went to every games company we could find with them. Sony were the only ones that took up the option. We then went to every games company with a couple of other things, and managed to license in tracks even when we weren't the owners of the tracks. So I think we were as proactive as we could be, but sort of a little frustrated about the process, and I think we felt we didn't get paid enough in a lot of instances. You know, we looked at the gross of games in the world is more than the gross of films, for a start, and the money spent on music in films is nearly three times the money spent on the music in games.
It's true. But I don't know if it's... I understand your perspective on things. Yeah, of course you will. You want to do that. But still, the games industry maybe it has to be looked at from a little bit different angle. Because, I mean, the music, again, the music has been written in a lot of situations. Maybe the gaming studio, their interest in licensing a track. And I see still a huge opportunity there. For instance, at Ion Interactive, we used a search database from EMI Music to look up tracks in a certain style. We were not necessarily looking for an artist, a well-known artist, because you really have to decide from your music strategy, from the games company, what is it that we're looking for in the first place? Are we looking for an artist to sell the game? Mm-hmm. And that happens sometimes, but that also depends on the type of game. Is it Guitar Hero, or what is it? If it's more like, as I said, maybe an action adventure game, you are more looking for moves. And for instance, if you are looking through a library with, you can say, library music, some of it is good, some of it is less good. But I was thinking, maybe your company, I haven't been to your website, but some of the things that the games company are very happy about, and because, as Eric said, it's primarily the sound designer, or maybe in some cases a music supervisor that is going to look for tracks, and we are looking for primarily moods of music. Maybe we say, okay, we need some hip-hop track for this particular place in the game. It's very easy for us to go into a search database and go genres, hip-hop, and you get all sorts of songs within that style, and then you can approach, okay, in a case of the EMI database, call them up and say, we found this track, it's just streamed at the moment, you press play, you hear the track, okay, not good, next. Instead, you have to go through the process of dealing with people on the phone, and they want to find tracks for you, and this and that, but things changes so quickly when you develop a game, and you sit with some screenshots in the beginning, and you try to find a certain style, and a couple of months later you have some animated film that you can use, and maybe you're going to change the type of music or the type of hip-hop track a few times, but just having access to a database, that really is the key, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are sync companies that are now developing databases that allow you access to
out your car, Stephen.
You'll be able to check in the post. And is the check in the post? Should we do some questions?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
Just a sort of pragmatic question. So, when you're approached for sort of thinking of people wanting to sort of offer the music or the music that they potentially could use, what would be sort of the optimal approach? Like, would you prefer to get a sample first and then get access to a database, or how do you
as I say, getting the possibility to work at your own pace, I mean, sitting in front of a database and looking through genres, and that's the best option. Also because it's a rare occasion where it's one person that is going to decide upon what music is going to be used. In my case, I'm not solely responsible. I have a creative director, I have producers, I have sound designers that also has a lot to say in the process. So it's also a collaboration within the game company. And instead of me sitting with a CD sampler and trying to skip through and say, what about this track? Then you can send a link. You can say, okay, come to my room, let's listen to some things. I just downloaded a few examples and put it up to some actual gameplay or a cutscene, and that is so helpful. I mean, it's especially these days when you have to produce faster, I still believe we're going to use these kind of databases even more in the future.
So say you found some music that you like to set database, is it necessary, or is it very important that you will then be able to sort of pick up that song, say, we like that, but we'd like it to be sort of long, that particular part? Do you need the band to be more sort of in that, sort of asking the process of sort of giving you parts of something like making it to adapt?
I mean, I will say the good thing about dealing with the companies that are production music companies is that maybe they have a roster of 10 composers that compose in a certain style, and if you approach them, the company, they can call the composer and say, can you make certain stems of this? Today, if we're talking about dance, the problem I see is still, and that's a bottleneck, maybe you have a lot of processes you have to go through. The song was mixed at a certain studio, maybe they don't have access to the tracks and so forth. But if that bottleneck was broken down, and you were actually, as a publisher, a licensing company, you would provide stems for the songs at the website, then you would almost invite gaming companies to be interested. And that's also sets up a new question for the future when we're talking about bands, because you have to let go of some artistic freedom, of some personality with your music. If a gaming company is downloading your tracks separate, and they are going to, you can say, remix your music in a way, maybe it's without vocal, with the lead singer be unhappy about this, and because a lot of bands, they have a certain pride, but as we're seeing with Sync, they are letting go and saying, okay, my music can be used, or our music can be used in a commercial, our music can be used in a film, in a game. Then the next step is also maybe to try to let go and say, okay, I trust, of course we would have to approve the game company's work, how they implement the music, but let's try not to be so afraid.
There are also websites out there where you can, companies where you can, the licensing companies that you can submit your music, and they have a search for developers, and they'll do the licensing for you.
And take 60%.
Take a bunch of your
Come to me, come cheap.
Or there are also websites where you can do it yourself, upload, you know, like clip art. How effective are
So what I've done is I've hired somebody to call all the sync companies or to play their system. So we go to sync company one and we say we've got a $5 million production coming out of LA. It's set for worldwide release. I need 1.15 seconds a minute of this track, and I want this track, and I want you to pre-clear it. We go all through the system, and then we come to the person. And the person says, I want to see the script. And we go, for a minute of music, I'm trying to clear. You want to see the script?
Well, what company should intervene, right? The company should be taking care of the agreement.
The
artist with their license.
The license, the sync platform, yeah.
The sync platform.
Okay, but all I'm really saying is at the moment that all these offerings that we've just talked about, Salman, the ones I've seen seem to come to a standstill where there's an interaction, where there's a negotiation. You know, that's where they seem to stop. It seems to, you know, yes, you can put all your music up there, but ultimately when you get to that one person is where the problems begin.
Yeah, there are certain sites where you're I'm not talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm talking about if you're at home producing hip hop beats and you've got hours and hours of music and you don't have to upload sites and stuff.
I just want to know how amenable games companies are into using music to provide cross links back to the site for people to use the music first.
Well, you know, the bigger games, like Grand Theft Auto, it's you can buy it directly from the game.
All I can say is that the company I work for, we haven't been using licensed music in that way yet, but I was listening in on the ENR speak before, and you were also there. And the interesting thing was also to hear about EA Games, that they provided a low price, but they couldn't give as much money to the music composer or the band, but they wouldn't provide that exact link.
The AI Games thing is a strange example because they did a deal with Network Management where they formed a joint company. So basically what happens is that the artists put the music on the soundtrack and they use the game as a platform to launch the artist, which is why they're very happy to provide the 2 million links and all that kind of stuff, because they actually have an interest with the management company.
I see.
Of the end. Oh, is this Network Artists, Network, a joint company with EA Games.
Who was the artist?
I don't know which artist that was, and then Christmas stuff about the artist.
They do have that deal with Network, but it's not exclusive to everything they put in their games.
No, but I'm just saying that they have a joint company, and that's one of the things they do.
But even when we did Orbital with Sony Games, and we requested, you know, like cross-promotion opportunities, and given the amount of money that it cost to develop stuff with them, we really didn't get any joy out of them on that particular game. But then, I'm not sure. I think in some games it's obviously more worthwhile.
I mean, there's the whole, there's the whole range of games. A lot of the games where companies are breaking down and doing those side projects, iPhone games, iPad games, and, you know, the kind of iPhone game, and it was commissioned by the record company for the artist, and it's just a great game. It plays a song over and over and over.
They're the areas that I like, though. They're the areas where you can say it's pure promotion. We've done the work for the game, and now let's have some fun. Can we find an app? Can we find something that will help our next single?
Yeah,
I think that's what I want the game to come.
in your line of work, which part is bigger? Is the composing part bigger towards the companies than the picking out bands?
I think the sound design is the biggest part, and I think the music, I think a lot of sound designers are either from companies or background or know music supervisor. The majority of the work is sound design music. Unless you know this is a being a teacher. It's for the game. It's not a piece of music that I've composed that's going out to the world to represent myself, to go with this particular visual. It's more, it's almost, I don't have a sound effect, but it's more effective to have silence and strength rather than to have a lot of it.
I was wondering, because you say you're both a sound designer and a composer. And sound design is not copyrighted.
No.
So where is that line drawn?
The line is drawn by the fact that the computer games company owns it regardless of whether there's copyright or not.
Alright, so there's always a buyout.
Yeah.
It's a complete buyout.
So there's never any mechanicals of
it depends usually not for composers. I mean, unless it's like an established band that has a manager who will represent them. Unless you're a composer that just goes to the website.
Thomas, Eric, and Steven.
Thank you. Thank
Wonderful.
You
yeah.